Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome to News and Views. I'm your host, Rob Schofield. These are historic times in the United States. For only the fourth time in our history, Congress is moving to impeach the President of the United States for corrupt acts. In this case, President Donald Trump's alleged efforts to bribe the government of Ukraine to aid his 2020 re-election campaign. Earlier this week, I got a chance to sit down with a widely recognized student of governmental corruption, NC State political science professor Dr. Mark Nance. Nance, who's written extensively on global governance and its interaction with both the legitimate and underground economies, shared his views on impeachment, its connection to political corruption more generally, and the need to combat rigged elections by ending partisan gerrymandering. Well, Professor Mark Nance, welcome to News and Views. Good to have you back with us.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Mark, you're a student of government, both internationally and domestically. We are in an extraordinary time in American history right now, only the fourth serious impeachment process in the history of our country. It's really dominating Washington politics in recent weeks. Do you have any thoughts, as obviously an observer from a distance, but as to how this is likely to play out?
Well, I think as it's likely to play out, honestly, I think there will be articles of impeachment that will pass in the House. And it will go largely nowhere in the Senate, unfortunately. Yeah. As cynical as that sounds, I think the partisanship is such that I can't imagine enough people in the Senate, enough Republicans in the Senate changing to really push it forward for removal.
So most Republicans are sticking with the president, as you've alluded to. Most Democrats with Speaker Pelosi. Both sides really sort of seem to want to get this behind them and just get it over with because they sort of already know what the outcome's going to be and get on with the 2020 election. Is that sort of what you are observing? And if so, what do you see it doing to the 2020 election?
I'm not sure that I think that at least one side wants to get it over with necessarily. I think the Democrats do have, some Democrats see some strategic advantage in dragging this out a little bit, although clearly they're moving steadily forward on this. I think what they're trying to do is come up with a clear statement of the package of offenses that were arguably in play here. And so to the degree they want to move it forward, they want to get that package clearly put together so that they can start using that electorally. Again, that's the sort of cynical read. I think there are those who are genuinely and deeply concerned about the content of this, that is not just a partisan political play, but there are genuine concerns that maybe we can talk about. Yes, on the Republican side, while there are some who suggest or have suggested that this will play to the advantage of Trump in particular, I think I'm not sure they're willing to bet the House on that. And I think, and literally the House in this sense, because we're talking about other elections down the ticket as well. And so I think the knock-on effect of this will be to sort of suppress Republican turnout, which will not work to their advantage. So they probably are more eager to get this behind them and move forward.
The substance of what's being brought up to the fore here, of course, is pretty serious stuff. Professor Michael Gerhardt, who's a law professor at UNC, who was one of the handful of law and constitutional experts who testified on the matter, said that if Congress fails to impeach her, then the impeachment process has lost all meaning, and along with that, our Constitution's carefully crafted safeguards against the establishment of a king on American soil. Do you think it's that serious?
I'm not sure we're moving into monarchy quite yet, but I do think that, yes, these offenses are fairly dramatic, and to me, it's fairly clear. You may not know this about me, but what I study mostly is illicit markets and illicit economies, and things like human trafficking and money laundering, but also corruption fall into that as well. And so I think if we can't take what has been said, what has been recorded, what has been even the sort of with all of the obstruction, what has been reported on what's gone on with the connection between Trump and Zelensky, if we can't look at that and say this is corruption, meaning this is the use of political office, of public resources, of personal gain, if we can't say that at this point, then certainly we have no chance of moving this forward in any other context. And I think it does exacerbate this, what I see as a problematic trend of the expansion of presidential powers and the continued sort of undermining of Congress as a co-equal branch of government. I think that's absolutely true.
You talk about corruption, of course, as a student of corruption, and it's at the heart of the impeachment trial. It seems to me that this corruption that is sort of so spread throughout our democracy is tending to lead to more cynicism amongst voters, voter apathy, and that it's sort of a cascading effect. That depresses voter turnout, participation in government, faith in government. Is that sort of the disturbing pattern you're witnessing?
I think that is a pattern that we're seeing, and I think that's what happens. This is the way that corruption has a sort of rotting effect on a government, and it becomes the way things are done, simply the sort of the rules of the game. Everyone accepts it. And of course, there's been a lot of outrage around a lot of issues with the Trump administration, but this one is, again, it's blatant, and it's on record. even for the records that have been provided. And so I think if we can't step up and deal with it this time, it really is going to provide sort of a carte blanche to future administrations to do whatever it is they want to do.
It feels like I'm watching something that's taken place in other parts of the world. You watch authoritarian regimes rise, perhaps elected by the voters in other parts of the world, but then rules start to get suspended, things start to change. Obviously, we haven't gotten to that point here where the Constitution itself is being threatened with significant change, but it feels eerily and disturbingly familiar, I have to say.
Well, I think that's true. And one of my favorite games is to say, what would this feel like if you read about it in another country? And we tend to think about corruption as existing in developing countries,
right,
and can't imagine that there's corruption in our own. Again, those of us who study these sorts of things, who study corruption, we sort of tend to assume that they're that it's around all the time. And certainly the United States is no different in that regard. So what we're seeing, you say that the Constitution is not being substantially changed, and I think that's true, at least on paper. But in fact, if nothing happens as a result of this, if impeachment doesn't happen, if there's not some consequence for this, including if the voters don't challenge and punish people who act like this, then we are just inviting this, and we are effectively rewriting the Constitution.
That's a very good point. Well, obviously, there are state-level versions of corruption that are going on. One of the most blatant in North Carolina in recent decades, an offense that's been committed by both parties, is the issue of political gerrymandering, of effectively rigging elections. We've had this going on here for a long time. It's really been perfected with the advent of modern digital technology in recent years. And now we've had a series of court cases in North Carolina regarding gerrymandering. We've had some perhaps improvement in our state maps, but it still seems as if we're not there yet when it comes to fixing this bit of political corruption.
It's hard to deny that we're not there yet. We're here in 2019, finally settling on maps that are based on a 2010 census. I've lost track of the number of times I've voted in what turns out to be an unconstitutional district, and I'm someone that tends to follow this fairly closely. And so it's mind-boggling how ill-functioning this system is for something that is so fundamental. I talk about this as the infrastructure of our democracy, and it is crumbling. It has crumbled. And so, yeah, I think we have serious problems that need to be dealt with.
One of the most striking things recently to me was there was a redraw, of course, by the legislature of the congressional map, which had been rigged to favor Republicans in a 10-3 majority. And now it looks like they've slightly lessened the gerrymandering, so it's most likely to turn out with an 8-5 majority. But there seems to be general consensus that the map is still a political gerrymander. The judges who had originally indicated that they thought the 10-3 map was unconstitutional kind of said, well, this isn't great, but the election's around the corner. We don't have time to really fix it. I mean, that was effectively what they ruled. And I thought that was striking that they thought that timeliness of an election was more important than actually getting the districts right. We could have delayed the primary for Congress from March to June, perhaps. The election's not till next November, but this sort of weirdly pragmatic decision by the courts was, I thought, very striking.
I think it's bizarre, and I think in some ways it's in keeping with the Supreme Court decision on the Roberts Court, where they said this is unjust. Gerrymandering and partisan gerrymandering is unjust. It shouldn't be allowed to stand. And yet, who are we, the Supreme Court of the United States, to interfere? And we have sort of the Superior Court, I feel like, sort of doing the same thing here, which is to say, this is really problematic. This is undermining our democracy. But my God, we couldn't possibly delay an election by a month. That would be really awful. So let's move ahead with a flawed system. Let's continue down the same tortured path and not do anything about it instead.
Obviously, you've been an outspoken proponent of a more systematic fix to this than just tinkering with maps. You've been supportive of the idea of a nonpartisan independent commission to come in and draw our maps. Everybody acknowledges that probably won't be perfect, but it does seem that that would be a step in the right direction. And maybe there's some growing support in the state for that.
Well, I hope so. I think one of the big shifts strategically even that happened on gerrymandering this year was the move to cases at the state level. So it took the Supreme Court and the federal judiciary out of the question. And there's pretty good evidence on the inside of this, sort of in the halls along Jones Street, that this changed people's consideration about the potential of meaningful reform. No system will be perfect. That's absolutely true. I think the more we can remove legislators from the process, the better. Historically, foxes guarding hen houses have not worked out for the hens. And we are the hens in this case, and the foxes have been guarding the hen house for far too long. And so I think what this process of redrawing that happened after the Superior Court decision struck down the maps showed was they don't even need, the Hoeffler files make them even better at doing this, but they know their districts, right? They're in their districts. They know them extremely well. They can come up with racial and partisan gerrymanders if they want. They can exclude college students if they want, which some do. They can do all of that without having to rely on those detailed maps if necessary. They prefer to have the data that of the sort that Hoeffler was using, but if they don't, they can do it more clumsily. And we saw, honestly, on both sides of the aisle, log rolling to say, I'll vote for this package of maps if you'll give me this little precinct and that little precinct and you can take yours. And they were more worried about, we might say, protecting each other's electoral assets than they were about really pushing through maps that were about promoting the interests of constituents.
Well, Professor Nance, we appreciate your keen insights on these issues. We really look forward to reading more. You're a frequent contributor to the editorial pages in our state, and thanks for your fine work at NC State. And we'll check in again later in 2020 to see how things are going and maybe moving in a better direction.
Thank you, Rob. We hope so.
Coming up next, a PTA leader turned state lawmaker talks to us about some of the front burner issues in the world of public education. Stay with us.